49. Zoya. The morning of Zoya's coronation, Jenya sent the servants away and insisted on doing Zoya's hair herself. Zoya felt strange letting her friend wait on her, but she was grateful for her presence and for her skills. "You haven't been sleeping," Jenya said, tailoring away the dark circles beneath Zoya's eyes. "Nothing new." But that wasn't entirely true. Her responsibilities weighed heavy on her. But in the weeks since their journey to the mountains, she'd been troubled by new nightmares. She and Jenya took their time over breakfast, looking out at the palace gardens, watching the mist burn away in the morning sun. They'd propped their feet on the windowsill, their plates in their laps. "I don't mind the view," Zoya said, reaching for another blinny. Jenya wriggled her toes. "The little palace is short on windows. Secrecy over scenery." Nikolai had insisted that Zoya take his chambers. "They belong to Ravka's ruler," he'd told her. "Go on, it's an opportunity to complain about my horrible taste." Zoya did hate the rooms, but not because of the way they were decorated. She simply missed her chambers in the little palace. Everything was so new, she couldn't help but long for the familiar. But on the day she'd moved in, she'd found a little wire ship on her desk, small enough to fit in the palm of her hand. From its mast flew a tiny flag emblazoned with two stars. She was glad to have a reminder of Nikolai and of Liliana with her always. Jenya helped her dress in a gown of darkest blue velvet, the skirt and bodice embroidered with silver thread and a pattern of dragon scales. It was reminiscent of Kefta, but no Kefta like this had ever been seen. "It's perfection," Zoya said. She'd entrusted Jenya with its design. "Thank you." "Oh, we're not done yet." Jenya vanished into the dressing room and emerged with what looked like a mile of spangled silver lace. Zoya lifted it in her hands. It was nearly weightless and glinted like captured lightning. "Did you actually skin a dragon?" "Didn't have to," said Jenya, attaching the cape to the shoulders of Zoya's gown. "I told him it was for the Queen of Ravka, and he shrugged right out of it." "You're absurd." "I'm delightful." "The train is too long." "Someone once told me, the chapel demands spectacle." Her tone was all mirth, but Zoya could see Jenya's sad smile in the mirror. She snagged her friend's hand. "I wish he could be here with us." Jenya brushed a tear from her cheek and they stood together, as they had in the mountains. "David would have hated every minute of this, but I wish it too." The chapel would never be a place of celebration for Zoya. She had seen Nikolai crowned in this room, but she had also stood beside Alina here, behind this very altar on the night the Darkling had laid waste to the little palace and murdered half the people Zoya had ever known. They had gone underground that night, but it had been years before Zoya had really let herself emerge into the light. The wounds had been too deep, the fear too profound. She hadn't believed she could ever feel safe again. And now, she let Vadik Demidov, the last of the Lansovs, who had been granted a glorious estate and a considerable amount of treasure, most of it courtesy of Count Kerrigan, settle Sankt Grigori's bearskin around her shoulders. She listened to Vladim Otswal, the priest who would serve as her apparat, preach the words of the old saints and the new. Work had begun on a small chapel in the lush quince grove that had once been the fold, and it was said that little altars to the Starless One had already begun to spring up in the places where the blight had struck, but that were now blooming. Zoya wasn't sure that she could make peace with the Darkling as a saint, but she had tried to fulfill her vow. When the time was right, she let Vladim place a crown upon her head. It was a crown born of battle, forged from their remaining scraps of titanium, set with sapphires and formed into the shape of curving dragon's wings. She looked out at this crowd of strangers and friends, at Jenya with her single amber eye, her red kefta now emblazoned with a golden dragon, at Leoni, the fabricator David had so admired, now one of the Grisha triumvirate, holding hands with Adric, who had not abandoned their demon king after all, and who would take Zoya's place to represent the Ethereali. Dignitaries had come from all over the world, delegates from the Kirch Merchant Council, including that oaf Hiram Schenk, who had done all he could to give Ravka's throne to Fjerda. The marshal from the Wandering Isle, Zemini's ministers, without whom Ravka would not have survived the war, and even the Shu princesses and their guards, Eri and Mayu, who had embraced Nikolai as an old friend, and Mikai, who had taken one look at the white flowers festooning the palace balustrades, the glittering courtiers at every doorway, the banners snapping in the wind, and said, "All the heavens, do none of you understand ceremony?" They had made sure Tamar and the Kergud were long gone before the Shu delegation arrived. Zoya would never feel easy in their presence, but she was grateful to them nonetheless. They had been engineered to hunt and capture Grisha, but that meant they were perfectly suited to saving Grisha as well. Locust, Harbinger, Scarab, and Nightmoth had agreed to join with Bergen, a Fjerdan Grisha, to locate Jarl Broom's secret laboratories, all under Tamar's command. Fjerda's crown prince had sanctioned the covert operation, and he was in attendance at the wedding, too, along with the woman who would be his bride, Mila Yanderstadt. She wore a gown of cream silk with a neckline that could only be described as scandalous, and opals the size of walnuts at her throat. "Fjerda suits you," Zoya had whispered to Nina when they'd managed to steal a few moments alone outside the chapel. "The food is still terrible, but we manage." "Your prince isn't at all what I expected from our intelligence. Far kinder and less arrogant." "He is all that Fjerda or I could want in a ruler." Zoya didn't need to let her dragon's eye open to sense the conviction in Nina's words. "I'm sending you back to that saint's forsaken country with a gift. A chef and 2 pounds of toffees. A plant. It's from my garden."
"Your garden? Zoya Nazielenski likes to root around with worms."
"Wretched girl," said Zoya. "I hope it will bloom for you, and I hope you bloom too."
She knew Nina wouldn't return to them, at least not for a long time. Zoya would miss the sight of the dahlias in the summer, but maybe they were meant for different soil.
Among the other honored guests in the chapel were a group of Suli dressed in silks. Some wore the jackal mask. Others wore their hair braided and decorated with flowers.
They were seated beside Nikolai at the front of the room, along with a couple in simple peasant clothes, the woman's gleaming white hair hidden beneath a beaded shawl. There were ghosts in this room, phantoms who would never be laid to rest.
They would walk this new path with her. Liliana, David, Isaac, Harshaw, Marie, Paja,
Fedyor,
Sergei.
The list was long and would only grow longer. You cannot save them all.
No, but she could try to be a good queen. The little girl would always be there, frightened and angry, and Zoya would never forget her, or how it felt to be powerless and alone, even if she was not alone now. She had her soldiers, her Grisha, her friends, her prince, and she supposed she had her subjects now, too. Zoya of the Lost City, Zoya of the garden, Zoya bleeding in the snow.
"Rise, Zoya, queen of Ravka," the priest said. "Wearer of the dragon crown."
Zoya stood. She raised the scepter in her hand. She listened to the people cheer,
watched her dragon banner, wrought in Ravka's pale blue and gold, unfurl. The task before her felt overwhelming. None of this had been fated. None of it foretold. There had been no prophecies of a demon king or a dragon queen, a one-eyed tailor, heart-rendered twins. They were just the people who had shown up and managed to survive. But maybe that was the trick of it. To survive. To dare to stay alive. To forge your own hope when all hope had run out.
"We're the survivors, then," Zoya whispered to herself as the people before her knelt and chanted her name. "And for the lost."
The rest of the morning was a whirlwind of greetings and congratulations, wishes for the future, and even a few veiled threats from the Kirch. The throne room was packed with guests and miserably hot, a fact not helped by the weight of her velvet gown, but Zoya endured it all with Nikolai and Jenya to help her.
"Still, there is something on her mind. Jenya, will you find Alina before she vanishes with her tracker? I need to talk to you both. Meet me in the king's chambers."
Jenya planted a kiss on her cheek. Your chambers. Nikolai appeared at Zoya's side as Jenya disappeared into the crowd.
There's someone I'd like you to meet.
He was accompanied by a Suli girl, tiny in stature, her hair worn in a thick braid. She curtsied with a dancer's grace.
Queen Zoya, it's an honor.
Zoya studied her a moment, noted the glint of knives discreetly hidden in her pockets and beneath her embroidered vest.
Captain Gaffar,
she said quietly, making sure her voice didn't carry in the busy room. Inej grinned.
You know my name.
Zoya glanced at where the Kirch dignitaries had gathered in a corner.
A great many people are looking for you.
The gleam in the tiny girl's eye was wicked.
They'd best pray they don't find me.
If there's anything you need.
She will have it, said Nikolai with a smart bow.
It's been my dream to visit this place, Inej said. To walk the same paths as the Sun Saint. Then we'll have to show you the little palace where she trained to use her power.
Inej's grin widened.
Bashe.
Merima, Zoya replied in Suli.
You're welcome.
A crease appeared between Inej's brows, her dark eyes focused on someone moving through the crowd.
That woman, she said. In the shawl, her hair.
Friends from the country, said Nikolai briskly. Now, let me introduce you to my sister Linnea. She'll want to hear of those new cannons you're using.
Zoya would have liked to follow along and listen to them talk ships and sailing and whatever else privateers and pirates like to discuss, but Tolia was already whisking her off to meet with a group of Kalish aristocrats. The Zemini followed, then powerful merchants from West Ravka, Fjerdan nobility and Count Kirigan, who had dressed in vibrant tangerine, his tie pin a gold dragon with a lump of turquoise in its claws. Zoya wasn't sure how much time had passed, or how many people she'd met, when at last she glimpsed Jenya across the room. She excused herself and hurried through one of the palace's many passages to Nikolai's chambers. Her chambers, damn it. Jenya and Alina were waiting in the sitting room, both of them seated by an open window, the cool air a blessing after the heat of the ballroom. Well, said Alina, setting down her glass of kvass as Zoya closed the door.
It does look good on you. Was there ever any doubt?
Jenya laughed.
I told you, she's the same Zoya.
You looked so serene up there, Alina protested. All an act, said Zoya.
Mostly I was hoping I wouldn't faint. This dress weighs more than I do.
Beauty isn't supposed to be easy, Jenya said with little sympathy. Alina nodded.
The real question is how you're going to outdo this gown for the royal wedding.
Don't get ahead of yourself, Zoya said. Nikolai hasn't asked.
Can you blame him? Jenya said.
He hasn't had much luck with proposals. Alina snorted.
Maybe he should have offered me a dynasty and not a piddly little emerald.
Poor boy, said Zoya.
But I do intend to dangle the possibility of my hand in marriage in front of every eligible politician, merchant, and minor aristocrat while we forge our new trade agreements and treaties.
Jenya rolled her eye. Very romantic.
I can't just stop being a general, said Zoya. It's good strategy.
Her romance with Nikolai would never be bouquets of flowers and pretty declarations of love. It lived in the quiet they'd found in each other, in the hours of peace they were stringing together one by one.
But you will get married, Jenya insisted.
I can't help but notice, Alina said. The too clever fox gave up his throne, but still managed to stay a king.
A prince, Jenya corrected. A prince consort, or is he your general?
Zoya didn't really care what title he took. He was hers, and that was all that mattered. Her eye caught on the blueprints she'd found waiting for her on her desk that morning. Designs for an extraordinary structure Nikolai had designed to protect her garden. The plans had been bound with her blue velvet ribbon and accompanied by a note that read,
I will always seek to make it summer for you.
Zoya had been courted by men of wealth and power, offered jewels, palaces, the deed to a diamond mine. This was a different kind of treasure, one she could not believe she'd been lucky enough to find. She turned back to Jenya and Alina, and leaned against her desk. She wanted to sit and rest her feet, but she was too nervous about what she had to say.
You know what we did in the mountains?
Yes, said Alina. You saved the world and doomed Ravka's most deadly enemy to an eternity of torture.
Very efficient questing, said Jenya.
Zoya tapped her fingers against the desk.
I've been having nightmares about the monastery, the Thornwood.
When she had touched the ancient tree, she had felt the Darkling's pain. The dragon hadn't let her forget it. What happens in the dreams? Alina asked.
I become him.
Jenya worried her lip. You're being tortured.
Worse than that. I have everything you wanted. The crown, the power. I'm a conqueror of cities, an empress, a killer.
In her dreams, she stood on the prow of a ship with a beautiful city before her. She raised her hands and the fold rushed forward in a black tide, drowning Novokuybirsk. She woke each night bathed in sweat, hearing her aunt's screams.
I'm not certain we can just leave him there.
Jenya crossed her arms.
No? Not if we want to rule justly. Not if the future is meant to be better than the past.
Do you have a fever? Jenya asked. But Alina's expression was knowing.
You're afraid you'll become him. You're afraid you'll be the avalanche.
Immortal and unstoppable. Another tragedy to befall Ravka.
What are we meant to do? Jenya said.
Free him.
Forgive him. Grant him death, said Zoya.
Jenya stood and walked to the mantel.
Does he deserve it? That is not my choice to make, said Zoya. Not on my own.
Alina rested her head on the back of the couch.
Why are we even discussing this? From what I understand, the Darkling knew the bargain he made. He stands at the doorway between worlds.
If he dies, the fold ruptures again and the void comes pouring through.
Yes, said Zoya. But the monk told me that a heart as strong as his could free him.
She'd spoken Liliana's words.
She'd wanted Zoya to listen.
Jenya looked aghast.
Someone to take his place, unless you're volunteering Jarl Broom. No, I think it was a riddle. Not someone, something. The first heart to be pierced by the Thornwood. The heart of Sankt Felix.
You're talking about a relic? Alina sounded skeptical. As someone whose finger bones are on sale in villages right now, let me tell you, they're all fake.
She's right, said Jenya. If Sankt Felix really existed and his heart was somehow preserved, no one knows where it is.
True, said Zoya.
And whoever has it won't be eager to part with an object of so much power.
Jenya made a kind of humming noise.
So, if we decide he deserves the mercy of death, where does that leave us?
Zoya touched her fingers to the little wire ship on her desk.
A priceless object, impossible to find, no doubt under lock and key and most certainly in need of stealing. I know a thief who might be up to the task.
Jenya groaned.
You can't be serious. You can't stand the man.
Because he is insufferably rude and utterly without morals, but
he has his uses.
You think he'll do it? Asked Jenya.
For the right reward.
There was a long silence in the room. At last, Jenya reached for Alina's glass and took a long sip.
I don't believe the Darkling has earned forgiveness.
I don't know how many years of pain buys that.
Or when we become the monsters and he becomes the victim. But I don't want to spend the rest of my life doing that math.
If there's really a way to accomplish it,
let's be rid of this burden once and for all.
All right, said Alina. Before she could talk herself out of it, Zoya rang for a servant to fetch Nikolai.
Has a decision been reached? He asked. I can't decide if you all look ruthless or beneficent. Maybe just hungry.
Is Captain Gaffar still here?
I believe she left an hour ago in the company of Prince Rasmus and his betrothed.
Perhaps that's a sign, Zoya ventured.
Zoya, Alina said warningly.
We did agree. Oh, all right, Zoya said. I need Stormhahn to take a message to Ketterdam for me.
I hear he's very busy these days.
I think he'll appreciate the reward.
He lowered his voice.
If it involves you out of that dress,
I have no doubt I can convince him.
You won't stop until you've created a scandal, will you?
The demon made me do it. What vital message will the world's most handsome privateer be taking to Ketterdam? Zoya sighed.
Tragic to think a woman might have everything she desired and still have need of a thief. Get a message to the Crow Club, she said. Tell Kazbrekker, the Queen of Ravka, has a job for him.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Rule of Wolves, King of Scars duology, written by Leigh Bardugo, performed by Lauren Fortgang. Executive producers Rena Eyre and Mike Charzik. Producer Kat Lambrix. Copyright 2021 by Leigh Bardugo. Sound recording copyright 2021 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.